Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Happy Hour Europe. I apologize for the brief delay in getting the show started this afternoon or this evening if you happen to be in the UK, which I know a number of folks listening tonight are in the UK. So welcome to the HR Happy Hour Europe show. This is the third show. We've done a special summertime series of HR Happy Hour broadcasts emanating live from HR Happy Hour HQ in beautiful New York, USA. My name is Steve Bowes. Really pleased that you could be with us today. We are talking about True London this afternoon and this evening at the True London event. I believe the fourth one, and hopefully someone will correct me if I'm wrong on that. True London 4 about to kick off in London starting tomorrow and will be tomorrow and Friday. It's a super event. I was at True London, the very first one, and would love to get back there one day as well. So when we talk about True London, we're still looking to hook up our guests who have not managed to connect through from London. There's been a few technical issues this evening in London where we're expecting our friends Master Burnett, Jason Larson, and Mervyn Dinnan to join us. I believe Alan Whitford has made it in, though, from the UK. Alan, can you hear me?
I could if I could figure it out. I don't know if you can
hear
me.
All right, I got you, Alan. I'm sorry to put you on the spot right there. You're the only one.
I had plugged in and what I didn't have plugged in. How you doing,
yeah,
Steve?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm great. How are you, Alan?
Doing good, doing good. So I'm sorry you're back in glorious summer Rochester.
I tell you what, I am in Rochester, New York. It's been a fantastic couple of days here. While we're waiting for our guests, Alan, let me just do a couple of quick announcements. This is HR Happy Hour Europe. My name's Steve Bowes. Alan Whitford has been summoned into duty while we wait for the rest of the team to show up from the London, True London headquarters. Our call-in number from the USA, certainly, 646-378-1086. Anybody who might be catching the show in the U.S., please do call in and chat. You want to talk to the folks over at True London or just talk about anything related to talent management, talent acquisition, recruiting, you name it. It's kind of be an open, kind of flowing show today. Or just ask a question for Alan himself, right? The man, RC Euro, and just sort of one of the leading voices in the UK recruiting space, even though he's a sort of upstate New York guy at heart, right, Alan?
Absolutely. You can take the kid out of upstate New York, but you can't take it out of the kids, right?
I tell you what, it's been nice here. Here where I live, for us, fortunately, we dodged the worst of that terrible storm, and so our thoughts and hearts go out to the folks here in the U.S. who have been impacted by that really, really nasty storm, particularly in the other parts of New York State, as well as Vermont, who's really been just hit hard by that. So thoughts go out to those folks as well. So, Alan, where are you right now? Are you down in London getting ready for True London tomorrow?
I'm still out at home out in the Cotswolds, but getting up at 5:30 tomorrow morning to make the journey in. So looking forward to that and seeing everybody about 9 o'clock by the time we manage to roll up there. You know, first Great Western trains with the band.
Right.
Have a terrific train service here in the UK, and I'm just hoping it actually works all the way for us. So, 3 or 4 years since he came out and spoke for us when we ran the ERE event out in Amsterdam a few years back.
Right. Alan, you are chopping up just a little bit. Hopefully your connection will stay solid throughout the call, particularly since we're still waiting for our friends from JobSite, Mervyn Dinan, of course, and a couple of special guests that have come over from the U.S., I believe both from the U.S., although I'm not 100% sure of that, are coming over for the True London event, Jason Lawrenson from Talent Anarchy, and Master Burnett, who works with Dr. John Sullivan and Associates as well. So really, and as well, right, Alan, if you're still there, can hear me, but
yep.
Master Burnett, Jason Lawrenson are just two of the Bill Borman's probably organized 50 great thinkers, leaders, session leaders, and whatnot to come and lead sessions at True London. As I recall, True London was just so encompassing, right? There were sessions and conversations about any subject you'd like, probably.
You're absolutely right. Hope I'm coming through clearer
now.
Yeah,
you sound good now, Alan. Yep.
Okay. In fact, I've been with Bill since the start of the Trues, and when Jeff came over from Toronto for the first True London, we were all pretty much kind of winging it by the seat of our pants. And then Bill's really evolved it. He just did Romania, among other places. I think he was up in Boston a few weeks ago as well. But to me, the real interesting element of an unconference is it's just that. You know, yeah, Bill's actually got pretty structured. There's a real structured layout with four sessions, four chats every couple of hours or so. But the reality is what may happen is that we'll all show up there at 9, we'll get started at 10, and by 11:30, someone will drop out and say, I can't do my session. Someone else will pitch in, well, I'll do one. And
right.
Some other people will be standing around at the at coffee going, why don't we go talk about this? And new session will just keep you. And to me, that's the unstructuredness and, well, organized chaos of unconferences that really make them quite different.
Yeah, and Bill's done a great job over the years. Is really, and you know, I mean, I'm going to call him out right now. I can't believe he hasn't even called in yet. Borman, who's called in to my show, right, my regular happy hour show, probably 30 times in the last couple of years. Where is he now? We're talking about him. It's ridiculous. So,
his ears should be burning.
Tell you what, he's the hardest working guy in recruiting, right? I give him credit for that. The man who never sleeps and puts on some fantastic events all over the world, really. It's really amazing how it's changed over the years. And we have, you know, a similar-ish kind of event that we do that I'm a part of here in the U.S. called HR Evolution. It's not quite the same, but it's got the same flavor, at least the same spirit to it, right? The heart's in the same place. So it's been really amazing, both certainly what's happened in the U.K., as well as what's happened in the U.S. with these kind of grassroots-style events that are they're accessible, they're informative, they're challenging, and they're kind of almost like they're for everybody. You don't really need to have a big budget or a big company behind you, right, to get involved. And I think that's what's one of the great things about them.
It absolutely is. And it's bringing people from a lot of different places. I know when you do the HR Evolutions, it isn't just people coming from geography. People come from all over. And we've got, having a look at that, there's people coming in from Holland. I know that Etienne, the happy recruiter, is in from Switzerland.
Sure, yeah.
You know, the guy's in from the States. Stephen O'Donnell is driving down from Glasgow. For you and I, it's a normal drive, like just to New York, drive to Glasgow a little bit, 300-400-mile trip. So people come in from all over to participate. And that also, I think, is one of the joys of it, is because although you may recognize a lot of the names, you may never get a chance to meet with those people in a more formal conference, because they'd be up on stage for 45 minutes and they're gone. Here they're there all day. They're in their jeans and their T-shirt and they're there all day. They can't escape you. You will get hold of them. You know?
Even if they want to. Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, let me do
a
quick reset. This is Steve Bowes. I've commandeered into duty Alan Whitford, who's called in as well. We are trying to track down Mervyn Dinan, Jason Lawrenson, Master Burnett. They are trying to call in. I know they're trying. I believe they're in a hotel somewhere and having some issues with the hotel telephony. So we do hope they can get connected soon. Otherwise, Alan, you and me are going to be carrying the ball for a little while. But the call-in number as well for anyone listening in the U.S., 646-378-1086. There's also the Skype option. I believe Alan Skyped into the show tonight. So on the show page, on the Blog Talk Radio show page, there's definitely a Skype option as well. And I probably should have tweeted that out, but I apologize, I did not.
Yep.
So
there is a Skype option, but you have to log into your Skype account. Be logged in your Skype account personality didn't block radio in order to type to work.
Right.
Now, I believe, I'm just trying to look, because Mervyn had also sent out a link. I think there is a UK dial-in number. I'm just going to have a look. Yes, there's a UK dial-in number, which is 0800-633-5356.
Okay.
I've never tried it. Merv seemed to have found a number, so you know, for UK listeners, they might want to give that a try as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sounds good, Alan. Thanks for that. We'll see. We'll give these guys, you know, a little bit more time. Hopefully, I just did receive a message from Mervyn that they're attempting to get things sorted out on their end. So we appreciate that. I tell you what, Alan, you've done a lot of these kind of shows, these live broadcasts. I seem to recall you doing them live from the dark corner of a very loud English pub right at the first two London I was at. So you know what it's like to pull these things off on the fly.
And connectivity at hotels in London sometimes can be a bit strange. So, you know, they're all trying to get online at the same time probably. But, hey, you know, what's going on in the West Park? Are you feeling pretty bullish about it? You know, we might as well talk about what's going on there because that'll be some of the comparison conversations tomorrow.
Yeah, Alan, could you just repeat that? You broke up just a little bit at the beginning of the question. So,
okay. I was going to say, you know, part of the conversation tomorrow will be about around the world. How are you seeing things in the U.S. market right now?
Yeah, well, I think certainly, and I apologize, and folks who are listening, the Skype connection broke up again. But you're coming a little bit in and out, Alan, but that's certainly not your fault. But I think the sense of the question was the sort of the general labor market and sort of the tone and sort of atmosphere here, I think. I think it's a mixed bag. I think it's so situational. Maybe perhaps it always is that way. I think there's still kind of a dogged, persistent economic, I don't know if the word is malaise or lack of enthusiasm by corporations, especially larger ones, to loosen up the purse strings a little bit and start spending, whether it's on acquiring more talent or even on capital goods, which theoretically, you know, has a downstream effect of stimulating employment as well. So you've got this persistent kind of 9.25% kind of unemployment rate that really hasn't moved that much in the last, I guess, the better part of a year or more. But meanwhile, right, you know, in certain markets, in Silicon Valley, in New York City, Washington, D.C., for sure, you know, the stories about the difficulty in acquiring the right kind of talent, whether it's the tech sector, skilled labor, or even things I saw something recently is you think rudimentary as finance and accounting professionals, that organizations still having difficulty filling. So to me, it's so situational, and maybe there's an element of regionalism to it, as well as industry specific. On one end of the spectrum, very, very difficult to find talent that many companies are reporting, but yet millions of folks out there looking for work. So it's really that's what I'm sensing here from the U.S. now. I don't know what it's like in the U.K. It's probably a little bit different there because I don't think you've hit the real serious depression kind of thing like we did here.
You're right. It's been a little bit different. Where it's gotten hammered here, of course, is in public sector.
Right.
Lots of subjects, which you are as a lawyer. We haven't hit that 9%, 9 to 10% level that seems to have hit the U.S. In talking to a lot of recruitment companies over the last few months, they're feeling pretty bullish that this year really is a good year, that companies are starting to recruit. But we're also seeing that trend move a bit towards more of the direct sourcing because companies are really being very, very careful with their budgets.
Right, sure. Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of the similarity to that here, too, in terms of that real careful monitoring of budgets. And you know, in here in the U.S., you hear a lot of business leaders talk about, well, they want some certainty. There's too much uncertainty, whether it's you know, too much you know, politics factors into a little bit, right? We've got the seemingly never-ending presidential election politics cycle's already begun here, right, for an election that's couple years away, right? And so you get into all this, oh, I'm not sure where taxes are going, or we're not sure what the attitude towards increased governmental regulation on businesses is going. And therefore, you know, so lots of businesses are thinking, well, I'm just going to hold tight, ride the storm out, hold on to all our cash. I mean, certainly in the U.S. and around the world, there's tremendous cash reserves being held by lots and lots of organizations right now as well. Now, let me do a quick pause right now, a quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Europe. My name's Steve Bowes. Alan Whitford has been commandeered into duty to hang out with us as well. We're looking for our guest Mervin, Jason Larson, and Master Burnett. There is another caller on the line. I'm going to see if that is them. Hi, from the UK, country code 44. Who's this?
Hi, Steve. It's Mervin.
Oh, Mervin Dinnan from JobSite. How are you, Mervin? You've made it in.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. Well, good job navigating the UK telephone system in the last 15 minutes.
The difficulty that we're having, it seems to be the phones in the room that they've given us, that they, when the speaker phone is on, we can hear you, but you can't hear us. So
right.
We're using some mobile technology here. So what I'll do, if I hand you over, you can find out who's in the room with me.
All right. That sounds great. Sounds highly professional, up to our normal high standards of production here on the HR Happy Hour show.
Awesome. Jason Larson.
Jason, how are you? This is Steve Bowes. How's it going, Jason?
It couldn't be much better. What a cool place to be.
Yeah, fantastic. You've got to be really impressed by the setup that they've provided for you, the high-tech equipment and the first-class treatment you've been afforded for your guest appearance on this show. That's got to be impressive, too.
Well, what if you can't overcome a technology fail, you're not trying very hard. So this just gives us a place to start and go up, right, from here?
Absolutely, absolutely. I was saying to Alan Whitford, Alan Whitford's on the line as well, and I was saying to Alan, we've done enough of these shows, Alan and myself, over the years that we've done them under probably most every circumstance, in every condition, with every kind of technology. So we're used to a bit of a hiccup now and again. So anyway, we're glad you guys have made it in. Jason, tell us a little bit about you, what you're doing, and a little bit about what you'll be talking about at True London in the next couple of days.
Wow. Well, so I'll do the very fast version here. In terms of what I am up to, I have been busy lately. I think for those that maybe don't know me, I spent the better part of the last decade in corporate HR leadership jobs, starting sort of in talent acquisition and growing through to sort of the full gamut of HR oversight. And then about, I guess 3 months ago, decided it was time for me to, I guess a friend of mine described it as go rogue recently, or another thing described it as go to the dark side, which is to get back to consulting. And I think, you know, Steve, you've known me long enough to know I have a huge passion for this work of HR and recruiting. And
sure.
It just felt to me that my skill set and what I do best was better suited to get on the other side of the business so I could help more companies do better HR. And so have been in the process of launching a business called Bulletproof Talent, where we're going to be doing, I think, some pretty interesting things. I mean, at the core, really, is just helping, I think, organizations and HR folks figure out why what they're doing isn't delivering the results that it should be and helping them redesign. But the big part of it is we're excited. We're going to be launching a really cool engagement survey product in October that we're excited to get out there. So I've been busy. A lot going on.
Great. Jason, thanks
That's
for that. And then why don't we, before we get into what you're going to be talking about at True London, Mervin or Jason yourself, do we have Master Burnett in the room? And we'd like to say hi to him.
Hi, Steve. I am here.
Master, how are you? It's so great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks. Master, why don't you tell us, our listeners as well, a little bit about yourself and what you're doing, and then we'll get into the True London conversation from there.
Sure. Well, for the past decade myself, I've been working alongside Dr. John Sullivan, who many people know as an author and one of the original contributors to the Electronic Recruiting Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
He and I have an advisory practice where we work with global organizations on next-generation human resource practices.
Right.
Really
okay.
looking at the disconnects between how organizations do HR today and workforce trends and social trends and helping organizations identify next-generation practices that kind of resolve those disconnects.
And so working similar to what Jason talked about, that gives you the opportunity to engage with lots of organizations, lots of leaders, lots of business leaders as well as HR leaders, right? And that's got to be something over the years. You must have some great insights and great stories to tell about some of the organizations you've had the chance to work with.
We do. You know, we engage with about 75 to 100 companies a year and around the world, in 63 different countries. So that has given us really unprecedented visibility into global workforce issues, regional workforce issues, industrial issues. And I think what it's really helped us do is when you engage with that number of organizations and you have that level of visibility, you get to see a lot of the common failure factors that really results in ineffectiveness and inefficiency in HR centers.
Yeah, and Master, you're going to be talking a little bit, I know, in the next couple of days at True London about branding. That's one of the topic areas that was called out in the True London content that I saw, as well as something I think you and Dr. John Sullivan work on quite a bit in your practice. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your sort of quick thoughts on employment branding. And in the context of, I'll just mention this before I throw it to you, back to you, last week we did a whole show on employment branding on my regular HR Happy Hour show, the nighttime show, and we had our guest was from Glassdoor.com. And so we kicked around the branding issue, and one of the things that came up sort of in the pre-show discussion, as well as a little bit on the show, is there's still a little bit of a cadre of folks out there who say, well, that's employment branding just doesn't really exist. It's kind of a soft concept. It's not really that important, and it's sort of a made-up construct. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about that as well.
Absolutely. It's something that I've dealt with for literally the last 11 years. My first employment branding project was for a company called Starbucks Coffee.
A little company you may have heard of. Yeah.
Most people have never heard of them. So, the big mistake that organizations make with employment branding is they try to brand the organization. The organization already has a brand. It gets a lot of its brand from inheritance, from its product brand, and from its corporate social responsibility efforts. Neither of those things really are indicative of what the company is like to work for.
Right.
And so the big mistake that so many HR professionals make is, one, they try to reinvent the wheel. They don't understand branding. They don't understand marketing. And more importantly, they don't understand exponential communications.
I'm not sure I understand exponential communications. So what do you mean by that?
If you want content to share virally, you need to be sharing content that people are willing and motivated to share.
Right.
And the vast majority of content that is produced related to anything to employment simply isn't shareable or worth sharing, for that matter.
Right.
So the big mistake is they try to say that an organization has a singular employment plan. For anyone out there who's ever worked for a large enterprise or even a medium-sized enterprise, the employee experience in one location is radically different than that in another location. If you're in finance, it's different than if you're in a manufacturing facility for the same organization.
Right.
Yes, you may have some attributes as an employer that benefit everyone, but they're going to be the generic, dull, boring attributes that have to do with systems, like compensation. We compensate it to 75th percentile. Woo-hoo. That doesn't get It doesn't do anything, and it's not worth talking about.
Yeah. It's hard to wrap your arms around that. It's like a rallying cry, right?
Absolutely. What is worth talking about is the day-to-day experience. What it's going to be like for me in this group or this group or this function over here with this leader who's very charismatic. And so if you spend any time with people in the product branding world, and they start to ponder what it would be like to apply real scientific branding to the employment space, their first realization is, you're not branding the employer, you're branding the job.
Right.
And while we can lump several jobs together and go to the market with a brand statement for a group of jobs, we cannot go to the market, the labor market, with a brand position that is the employer. Because the organization is just not going to be the same. Everybody throughout the organizational structure. And so that's the key weakness that many organizations make. You take a company like Starbucks, for example. Most of their brand work is focused on their retail operations. The job architecture at the retail level is very simple. There's four jobs.
Right.
And so we can really talk about that. And at Starbucks, it wasn't so much that there was the branding had to differ by position, but the branding will certainly have to differ by region. Because what it's like to work in, say, Starbucks Northwest is radically different than what it's like to work in Starbucks Southeast. Because
right.
They inherit a lot of that day-to-day work environment culture from their district managers or their regional managers. Those are the charismatic leaders that influence that day-to-day experience.
Right. Master, thanks for that. Let me do a quick reset, and I'd like to get Jason and Mervin back on if we can. I'm not sure if you guys are sort of hand-passing an individual phone. I'm not sure what's happening over there, but hopefully we'll work our way through this. My name's Steve Bowes. This is the HR Happy Hour Europe, final show of the summer. Summer's just about over here. I can't believe it, last day of August, but it's been fantastic to do these HR Happy Hour Europe shows. Our call-in number in the U.S., if you're hanging out with us today, I'm not sure who's around, but it's 646-378-1086. Please do call in and say hello. We're happy to have you on board. Alan Whitford's still with us, hanging in there tonight, and thanks, Alan, for that. And please feel free, Alan, to chime in at any point as well. And in the UK, from a shared hotel room cell phone kind of situation, we have Mervin Dinnan from Jobsite UK. We have Jason Lauritsen from Talent Anarchy, and from Bulletproof Talent. Did I get that right, Jason? Bulletproof Talent?
You did.
And, all right. Yeah. And Master Burnett, who works with Dr. John Sullivan and Associates. Jason, I'll just throw it to you. So Master talked a little bit about your branding and this conception of there's lots of different aspects or manifestations of the brand inside organizations. You know, you've worked in organizations and you're working with other organizations now in your consulting practice. How much do you kind of think about the organization in its sort of totality and the HR function as it supports the entire organization versus kind of understanding more deeply what's going on in the organization? This distinction, I guess, that Master brought up, I'm not asking the question really that intelligently either, but I think it's an important distinction and one that somehow I think we perhaps we miss sometimes when we talk about HR inside organizations. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about the multiple different sort of cultures inside an organization.
Wow. I think I understand the question, and if not, I'm going to go ahead and answer the question that I think I understood.
Yeah, answer a better question, because I know I didn't ask that question really that intelligently, because it's a difficult concept sometimes to get my hands around. So I don't know. I'd just love for you to maybe think about that a little bit and tell us what you think.
What came to mind is, as Master was talking is I actually just this week actually was having a conversation sort of unrelated to employer branding about this idea or concept of place branding, which sort of comes in when you're talking about sort of regions or nations or states or cities or those kinds of things. And the model that they use in place branding is more so to sort of think about it in terms of understanding, like, what do we want the brand of this place to be? Like, what do we want the experience to be? How do we want people to feel about the experience of this place? And then to think through sort of it becomes very operational. And I think my experience has been that's where HR is sort of fails, or where the organization fails, is that we think it's about words, and we think it's about design, and we think it's about all this other nonsense, which, I mean, that's important, and it feels good, and it can get an executive, just an executive group off for a two-hour meeting, but it doesn't change anything. And this idea of place branding goes into saying, once you've defined how you want your place to feel, then you start to think about architecting the operational structure to support creating that experience. So I think that's honestly, from an HR perspective, where I think, and this gets into a whole other issue, and I think Master and I probably could sit here all day long sort of bemoaning the fact that, our HR brothers and sisters don't have the operational and business chops to understand this conversation, I don't think, all the time. And that's where we've got to really study the business, is that this isn't about, like I said, it's not about that polish. It's about does the job, does the way we treat people, the whole employment experience from when you get recruited all the way through to what it's like to show up, to what it's like to do your job, to how you're treated on a day-to-day basis. I mean, there's so many different moving parts that really is the operational side of a job, of a job experience. That's where the brand lives. That's what's real, and that's where it comes from. And so I think you're right. I honestly don't know that there's a right or a wrong answer in terms of this idea of you know, is there a single brand or multiple brands or whatever. I mean, I like the idea of sort of the nation state model, where there's a sort of an overarching Bill of Rights that says, you know, in general, these are the laws of our brand we don't violate. And then you can take within that, you can experiment and create your own identity, your own space there. And I think that's been proven to work in some different places. But that's how I think about brand. I don't know,
right,
Steve, if that's the question you were getting at. No, that's
very interesting, Jason. I just wondered if something that in your thoughts there and you're sharing your observations, the next sort of follow-up that I thought about was a little bit about ownership and whether or not, like in your opinion, do you get the sense that organizations should look at sort of that overall experience from that first encounter with the organization, whether they're being sourced or actively recruited or whatever that initial encounter is with the organization, through all those steps, right, that you talked about, that encompass someone's journey, right, through the organization, through the recruiting process, through the onboarding process, and so on and so forth, development, training, deployment, and whatnot, that there's really not, I guess my sense is there's not really ownership of that in most organizations that spans all those functions, right? There's lots of handoffs, right, inside organizations. And I wonder if it might make sense to have more sort of cohesiveness across that experience by having someone own it.
Well, what's missing, if we look at the product branding space, behind every great product brand or behind every great brand, there's product management.
Right.
And
right.
That's what's missing in the HR space. There's no one managing the employment product.
Yeah, right. That's
and
kind
that's
of what I was thinking,
doing.
Right. Yeah.
Jason, this is Alan Whitford at RCR. I think that's an interesting point, that there's nobody managing the employment product, except that we tend to believe that HR is supposed to own that employment experience, that candidate journey, but the person who really owns that is the line manager. The first day I show up to work, and my phone's not ready, my desk's not ready, my laptop's not ready, and I don't have a car parking space. So as much as we can have, and I could debate with you guys forever too about employment brand, that we have this employment brand and we have this ethos inside. You said, well, we know this is what we're going to do. These are our 10 laws of whatever we're going to do. If the hiring manager blows it on day one, then it doesn't matter all the other stuff we've done. The employment brand for most employees and most jobs is, what's it like my first week at work? That's now my employment brand.
Well, first off, I got to get Matt. That was Master's comment that teed that up, so I want him to have credit for that. I completely agree with him. Jason's talking now. I think, though, that's typical HR thinking, right? I mean, I think that's like, oh, well, we can't do anything about it. It's that damn line manager that screws it up. Well, who's holding that line manager accountable? And at what point is HR going to stand up and quit crying and whining about what they can't do and start realizing that if they don't, no one will? I mean, that is the reality of this, is that we have to be accountable for it. We have to. And that doesn't mean that I can control everything that happens. But what it means, though, is that it goes back to that product marketing. If a product manager finds out that a storefront manager is screwing up how their product is being displayed or how their product is being marketed or positioned, somebody's ass is going to get chewed, and there's going to be something that gets changed. HR doesn't take the ownership of this the way that we have to in order for it to work. And I think that's why we haven't honestly moved the needle any farther than we have.
Jason, super point. Go ahead, Alan.
I was going to say, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think it's a terrific approach that you've got, and I'd love to have that conversation be much more into the HR community. That you, if you want to, you know, this goes back to this, the other argument that HR has always trotted out. well, you know, we're never on the board, we're not respected at the boardroom. It's because they're not doing the stuff in running the business that the sales manager or the product manager or the, you know, the delivery manager or the, you know, are doing. They're contributing to the business with business results and being measured by it. Perhaps we've got to go back to that piece a bit as well and say, HR, you should be measured on the candidate experience and the employee experience, and which means you will start grabbing hold of those hiring managers and trying to get them on board.
But, Alan, you're talking about something that we can do. To Jason's point, there are things that we can do. If you look at the organizations that do have great employment brands, whether they be group-centric or region-centric or locations, however centric they may be, they have done a phenomenal job at cascading management methodology. So you've got very charismatic leaders who believe in managing a certain way, and they actively engage with their subordinates to ensure that methodology is being carried out throughout the organization. And when they find that it isn't, there's holy hell to pay. There really is, because that's the management methodology of the organization. Most organizations do very little to build into the systems that govern the workforce of the organization management methodology.
And I will jump in and say, though, that I also am a realist, and that HR cannot compensate for stupid, crappy, incompetent leadership. And there's a whole lot of that out there. So you do your damnedest, right? I mean, you do your best, and you fight the fight that you need to fight. And then when you find out that you can't do it because of, you know, you have lousy leadership in your way, then you need to go find an organization that you can. You need to go find a leader that you can. I mean, you know, doing great work of any kind is not possible everywhere. It requires certain circumstances and certain things to be in place, and I think branding is no different.
Jason and Master, Alan as well, let me just do a quick pause, a quick reset for folks who may be tuned in tonight. This is the HR Happy Hour Europe show. My name is Steve Bowes. I'm in the U.S., of course, sadly not with my colleagues over in London tonight. I wish I could have been there. On the line with us, we have Jason Lauritsen, Master Burnett. We have Mervyn Dinnan from JobSite UK, sponsors and sort of architects of HR Happy Hour Europe, so we're glad to have them on board. Alan Whitford's chimed in as well from the Cotswolds in the UK, and Alan and I are old friends. Sadly, you know, we're not neighbors anymore in the upstate New York area, but Alan's a super guy, and we're so happy to have him with us as well. We'd love to have you get on board as well. U.S. number 646-378-1086. Twitter as well, a hashtag. I haven't even mentioned it all night. Our hashtag HR Happy Hour. We'll keep an eye on that. Mervyn, if you had a local UK number you wanted to mention on the air right now, please do so. If not, we'll just carry on.
Yeah, I will do, Steve. It's a free phone number. It's 0800-633-5356.
Okay, great. Mervyn, thanks for that. So, Mervyn, I haven't had a chance to say hello to you. So let's talk a little bit about True London, since I know JobSite's one of the sponsoring organizations of True London. I can't believe, Mervyn, Mr. Bill Borman hasn't chimed in tonight. Did anyone tell him the show was on? Unlike him, not to make an appearance.
I have to say, we're in the hotel where True London will take place. I don't think Bill's here yet. I don't know if he's listening on mute, but he's not here yet.
Fair enough. So, Mervyn, then I'll throw it to you to tell us a little bit about, you know, JobSite's sponsorship and support of True London. And you're a veteran that probably of every True London, Mervyn. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about.
I have seen True London. Yes, I've seen it from kind of a germ of an idea back in November 2009 to kind of what it is now, which it's very much an international thing. I mean, I'm sitting here with Jason and with Master, who I would say I've not met, but I have met Jason at HR Evolution before, but I obviously forgot about it. and yet I walk into the bar downstairs, and there's Kevin Wheeler's there, Lisa Scales from the UK, there's Gordon Lockenberg from Holland, and there's Etienne from Switzerland, all having a drink at the bar and everybody gathering for the event over the next 2 days. So it's very much an international gathering, a meeting of minds now, I think. And one of the reasons that the job site, you know, are proud to be behind it is that it's where the conversations happen. And I think we want to promote that. We want to be at the forefront of the thinking, you know, around recruiting, HR,
talent and what global thought leaders like Jason and Master has to say.
Yeah, Mervyn, I agree. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I attended the very first True London, which was a phenomenal event, and I think it's just gotten better, quite frankly, from all reports that I've seen.
Yeah,
so great.
Steve, you're at the second one.
Oh, the second one. I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying it began before then, so it's kind of 2 years almost now.
Yeah, it feels like it's been a long time ago. Regardless, yeah.
Well, it's interesting because the. I wrote something earlier in the year that the very first one back in November 2009, it was very tentative. There were people there who didn't really know what social media was. A lot of people who went to listen to people like Matt Alder and Paul Harrison and Andy Hedworth tell us what social media was and how it could be used. And what's amazing is that so many of the people who were there then, 2 years later, now are doing, effectively social recruiting roles, of which I'm one. The community that really was born that day in the UK has kind of grown, and obviously on the recruiting side, on the HR side, we have kind of our own little community as well. And I think that it's gone beyond kind of how to embed social media in recruiting and HR, and kind of listening to Jason and Master here with what they were discussing before, these are very much the kind of conversations that we want to be a part of.
Yeah, Mervyn, thanks for that. I do agree with how things have changed in the last few years. As I said, we do a similar kind of event, right, the HR Evolution, which, Mervyn, I know you've attended in the past, as well as Jason. And the very first HR Evolution, I know we did a session about the basics of blogging and the basics of social. It was really, really rudimentary, and there's no way we could do that session again. There's no shot we would offer it. It wouldn't make any sense. No one would come, right? Because this community, certainly anyway, that's dialed into shows like this and to events like True and HR Evolution, have really, it's remarkable how much it's progressed in the last couple of years. It's fantastic as well, but certainly quite remarkable. So.
And Steve, Merv, this is Alan again from Arcero. I think what's also interesting is that we've probably got people leading tracks the next 2 days that were just attendees in the first one or two sessions. And they've stepped up, and I think that's also one of the unique elements of the unconference approach is that people will lead tracks that may never have sat up on a conference stage before. They've never done what Jason or Master or I or Merv have done of like running conferences or being out there in the front of people before. But they'll take one of these tracks because there may only be 15 or 20 people sitting around talking and actually start a conversation that's something that's really close to their heart. And yet at the same time, we'll still have some tracks like Lisa's track on community, which I think we've run on every event except possibly the first one. And the conversation that we have about community is different every time. It's not the same conversation. It's not the same 25 PowerPoint slides that someone might give for 2 years. It's a completely different conversation based on who's in the room.
Yeah, that reminds me, Alan, of the old quote that's always attributed to Albert Einstein, right, when he was a professor, right? He would give the physics exam or whatever course he was teaching. He'd give the exam, and a student came up to the professor and said, Professor Einstein, the exam is the same as it was last year. It's all the same questions. And he said, yeah, I know, but this year the answers are different. And so I think it's very much akin to what you're describing with some of the social community branding, those kinds of topics as well. So let me do a quick reset. We got about 15 minutes to go in the HR Happy Hour Europe show. My name's Steve Bowes. Joining us today are Mervyn Dinnan from JobSite UK, Jason Lauritsen, Talent Anarchy, Bulletproof Talent, Master Burnett from Dr. John Sullivan and Associates. It's a lot to say, Master, the whole Dr. John Sullivan and Associates. Does he go by just Doctor, or can we just call him John? I have to talk to him next week, I think.
He goes by John. We will see you next week.
Yeah, we'll see you at ERE, right? I hope. I think you'll be there, Master, right? ERE Expos next week in Florida.
I will be there.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to that. And Alan Whitford on the line as well, so we're really pleased that we got all the technology glitches sorted out at the beginning, at the top of the show. Alan bravely soldiered on as hung out with me for the first 10 or 15 minutes of the show, and we're really pleased for that as well. So Jason Lauritsen, I'd love to throw it to you. I was reading some of the pre-conference content, the True London conference content that you had posted over on the Jobsite UK site prior to the event, and one of the pieces I read really intrigued me a little bit, which was called "Are We Really in the Talent Acquisition Business?" where you sort of start talking about what some people might perceive a semantic difference between the terms of recruiting versus talent acquisition, but you sort of took it a little bit deeper than that. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about, in your mind, the differences between sort of old style or old school recruiting versus this new terminology, if you will, talent acquisition, and what you meant by that article.
Well, I meant to hopefully interrupt people's thinking, if nothing else, just for a moment, because one of the things that I've become increasingly convinced of in HR, and I don't know if it's exclusive to HR, but I think it happens a lot in HR, is we like to use terms like talent and engagement and brand, and we put those terms out there, and we put programs together, and we get funding, and we go do big things. And yet at the end of the day, if I sat you down and asked you to give me a definition of what that means to you and your organization, about 90% of people give me a blank stare. If I say, what is talent, to a lot of people that are in talent positions that have titles with the word talent in it, they can't like immediately hit me with what it means. And that to me is profoundly disturbing because when you aren't setting that, when you don't know, when you're not intentional about what that means, I think then it becomes very easy to sort of, then we become very, we stay transactional, I guess. That's a signal that we're certainly not moving into the strategic band of our work. And so I guess the point I was making is that, although we talk about talent acquisition a lot, I think, frankly, most of us are still doing recruiting. I think, if you really peeled it back and pressed and really looked at what was going on in most recruitment organizations, and I know this was true in mine, is that what talents meant was whatever the hiring manager will hire. At the end of the day, that's what, when we said when in talent acquisition, the talent part of that meant whatever that hiring manager will hire, because faster they make that hiring decision, the better all my other important metrics look, my cost and speed and all of those things, the metrics that really get valued or that we like to, sort of wave in front of the CFO. And so I guess that's what I was saying, is that I think we need to be careful about, if we're going to really be in the talent acquisition business, then I guess I would challenge someone to say, okay, when's the last time that you told a hiring manager they couldn't hire someone that they wanted to hire because you didn't think they were a good fit?
Right.
Or better yet, that's really where the true test is. And so that was the point I was trying to make, is that I just think we've gotten a little lazy about throwing the word talent around, and I don't think we're putting the true sort of focus and diligence and intensity and intelligence behind what that should mean in the organization.
And do you think HR can sort of drive that focus, Jason, or does that really need to come from, your C-suite, or or is it a combination of both? You know what I mean? Is it hard to push that agenda with an executive team that maybe is not interested in hearing it?
Well, it's always hard to push an agenda with an executive team. I mean, if your executive team doesn't want to hear it, that's always going to be hard, but they don't want to hear about anything in HR. So, unless you're really, really lucky, unless you're really lucky and you happen to get a CEO that gets it and really understands talents or whatever, but most of the time you're fighting uphill. So if they don't get it, part of our job is to help them get it. If we don't do it, who is going to do it? I just don't see where that goes. So I'd be interested in Master's thoughts on this.
I'd love to as well. I wanted to throw it to him next.
Yeah, I would just piggyback onto that, and I say it's hard to push a strategic agenda when your typical HR function continues to hand off portions of talent acquisition that are becoming the largest portion of the workforce. That being your contingent labor pool, your consultant labor pool, your outsourced service providers. The fact that most HR professionals don't want to play a role in holistic talent resourcing really is indicative that the vast majority of the HR audience wants to be requisition-centric, wants to be stuck in that transactional bubble and wants to be stuck doing line recruiting.
Steve.
Master, this is Alan.
Yeah, go ahead, Alan, and then Raven.
I just say, and I think, by the way, I think that's a great quote, that talent is whatever the hiring manager will actually hire. But, Master, do you think that it's that HR wants to be requisition-centric, or is it, if you ask a normal HR person who is responsible for recruitment, because in the UK we don't have a lot of resourcing departments, they've got anywhere from 12 to 15 to 18 different things they're responsible for every week. So recruitment comes up like every 2 days. It may not be that they want to be recruiting, you know, requisition centric, but they kind of feel, well, what else can I do? I don't have enough hands. I can't hire more bodies to be proper resources. So I'm going to hand it off because it's got to get done somehow, and I'm at wit's end. I don't know what to do.
My pushback to that is when a business needs to do something, truly innovative business leaders find a way to do it regardless of the constraints.
I would agree with that, but is an HR person a truly innovative business leader?
Therein lies one of the key problems. Yeah. The vast majority of HR leaders are probably overburdened, and as a result, they do what's easy. Requisition-centric recruiting, relatively easy. Doesn't require a great deal of forethought. A lot of resources available to support requisition-centric recruiting. It's a simple process.
Master, one of the things, you know, there's a couple of very interesting things you said, and we're not going to have time to probably dive into them all. We've only got about 8 or 9 minutes left on the show, but the contingent sort of consulting, casual employment market, and how that interrelates with the overall workforce plan is a really interesting topic, and I think perhaps we should maybe circle back to that for its own show, because I think it probably could deserve one as well. The other question I wanted to ask you that came to mind as you were talking was my thoughts about measurement and whether or not that typical organization measurement of those transactional metrics, you know, time to fill, cost of hire, those that first level of measurement is what drives a lot of this HR position, HR and recruiting positioning, because that's what we're going to be measured on, so that's what we're going to be worried about. And we're not measuring more deeply inside to the effectiveness and the quality of what we're doing in talent acquisition.
It's not my terminology, but Jason can probably agree. When an HR organization shares those type of analytics, the vast majority of business leaders respond with, so what? What does that mean?
Right.
Those
right.
numbers mean absolutely nothing to the business. We are not talking to the business in terms of operational capability, operational efficiencies, operational quality. These are terms that the business uses on a daily basis that the HR function, to Jason's point, probably couldn't even define or remotely identify how they impact those operational analytics. So we're pushing the wrong numbers.
Right. Yeah, Jason, would you agree with that? There's at least an aspect of sort of a measurement and sort of analytical problem here.
Yeah, and I think part of it, we keep letting ourselves off the hook too. Is that I used to do this. You get it good, you get it fast, or you get it cheap, and that is not a distinction that exists anymore. I mean, on the product side of the business, they have to do all three, and they have to do it all the time. And so the fact that we still live in a world where we think it's okay to sacrifice in one of those areas, I just don't think is realistic anymore. I don't think we can push that. So I do think there's a measurement issue that we aren't going to solve in the next 30 seconds.
No, sadly we're not, Jason. But here's my segue. You've got 2 days to work on it over at True London yourself, Master Mervin, and the whole crew, Alan Whitford, and the whole crew out there. So let's end a little more positively, right? We've been a little bit downer. It's partially my fault in the last few minutes. Let's talk a little more positively, Jason. What message are you bringing to the sessions you'll be leading or sort of co-facilitating to some extent at True London? What's the message you're going to be mainly focusing on in the next couple of days?
I think be intentional. Just be intentional and know why you do what you do. I just am such a – I think if we really get to the root of why we exist, and commit to that from a business perspective, a lot of these issues start to get clear.
great. How about you, Master? What's on your mind, and what will you be talking about or wanting to talk about in the next couple of days over at True London?
I want to – Bill Borman just joined us in the room, and when he and I had a telephone conversation, we were talking about the, kind of the power rules behind social networking.
Okay.
And so what I really want to bring to the conversation over the course of the next 2 days is the HR function isn't in this battle of how to use next-generation workforces and next-generation tools alone. Other functions are going forward at the same time, and they've got phenomenal learnings and phenomenal tools to share. And the fact that the HR function wants to ignore what other functions have learned and not apply those is silly to me. So I really want to talk about those learnings and how they make sense for application within HR.
I would agree with Master on that, Steve. It's Bill here.
Bill Borman, welcome to the show. I've been talking about you for an hour.
That's cool. I like to hear that. I'm really picking up on the point Master's been making. I've noticed over the last 4 or 5 months as businesses have got maybe a bit busier or a bit more challenged that the from a networking point of view, I think the whole HR circuit has become more and more entrenched back into HR. I'm seeing the reverse. I think when we had the recessionary times, nobody had any work, so we all tweeted to each other and spoke and
right.
stuff like that. I'm seeing that we're going back into silos, and the message I want to bring, you know, even though we're having this conversation about what's talent acquisition, what's HR, what's marketing, we just want to talk about what's good business. You know, and good business is all of those things. So I'm hoping that over the next couple of days, you know, that's something I want to see come out with, that we don't see an HR silo. And I'm really sensing, a lot of it's online, but I'm really sensing more and more where HR people are grouping with just HR people again, and recruiters are grouping with recruiters again, and marketing guys. And I think maybe a year, 18 months ago, we had a bit more of the Woodstock world where we all loved each other and spoke to each other. And I'm hoping, you know, that's really something I always wanted to be true. We've got 190 people coming tomorrow, which is...
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, you've seen the beginnings it came from, which is going to be interesting. The other really interesting thing is there's over 80 of those people coming are third-party agency recruiters. We've never had more than 10 in the room. You know, so
right.
I think there's a bit of waiting to smell the coffee. Admittedly, there's some of the major chains, the Adecos and Manpowers and so on, although most of it is niche specialists who perhaps are saying, look, this is the way we can do it. So I think we're going to have a really, really different 3 days. You know, I think it's going to be completely different to anything we've experienced before. So, I'm really looking forward to that. And mostly I'm looking forward to the snack, which is influence or I'll let you decide on that.
So, Bill, you're getting into True London the next couple of days. You want to leave our audience, our listeners, the attendees, any final thoughts, what to think about, what to do, what not to do, any sort of advice from doing dozens of True events?
You know, stop being HR people and start being people. Go and speak to someone. Go and speak to the marketing department. And don't try and figure out what their problems are. Just go and speak to people. And I think once you do that's why I love the unconference. Once you get everybody talking, people come up with really neat solutions, and I can guarantee you it will be exactly the same this time. The smartest guy in the room will not be sitting around the table now. He won't have been flown anywhere. It'll be somebody who none of us know yet who's going to really stand out over the next 2 days. And that's the thought I want to leave you. And the same as an unconference, give people a voice, you're going to get smart ideas.
Yeah. Bill, fantastic. So what's next after True London? Where's the True train heading next?
We're going to South Africa in November.
Wow.
We've got 2 events in Johannesburg and Cape Town, and then coming back for Amsterdam, and in December, Australia and New Zealand. So it's pretty crazy. Next year, I'll be announcing 25 events in the States. So I'll be coming to a town near you.
Wow. Sounds like it, Bill. Well, Bill, thanks so much. Good luck at True London in the next couple of days. I do want to say thanks so much to Mervyn Dinnan and JobSite. As well, for sorting out our technical problems at the top of the show. Great to hear from you, Mervyn. And, of course, Jason Lauritsen and Master Burnett, who joined us tonight as well. Enjoy your time at True London the next couple of days. I'm sure you will have a great experience there. I think that's it.
Steve, I want to say thanks to you. You're doing a great thing with the HR Happy Hour Europe with the job site, guys, because
forget it, people are people. Let's connect all the nations.
That is absolutely true, Bill. Thank you so much for that. My pleasure. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll say goodnight from the HR Happy Hour Europe, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, everyone, and goodbye.
Thanks, Steve. See you guys tomorrow.
See you, Alan.
All right, I got to jump on another call.